Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast in Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, November 16, 2023. 30 people were killed in intercommunal violence in South Darfur.
It's a classic conflict among them because it was happened in these previous 10 years, I think, about three times or four times.
And French medical charity group Doctors Without Borders accuses the Sudan Armed Forces of blocking medical supplies from reaching hospitals in Khartoum.
That was said indirectly, but mostly it's for the RSF soldiers not to be treated. But now it's extending to, of course, everyone living in this part of Khartoum.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Thirty people were killed in South Darfur state following intercommunal fighting between two communities over the past 4 days. A civil society activist in Darfur says two communities have been fighting over land for the past 10 years. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
Fighting erupted in El Nadif and Fayad Marfaina areas of Buram locality in South Darfur between two communities on Sunday. Abdul Basit Al-Hajj, a civil society activist, speaking from an undisclosed location, told VOA the two sides are fighting over resources, especially land.
The main reason is just the demarcation of the land. That's what they're saying. And also sometimes they're saying, stealing the animals from side to side.
The civil society activist says the Salamat and Habania communities have clashed several times over the past decade.
It's a classic conflict among them because it was happened in these previous 10 years, I think, about three times or four times. And I think this time is maybe it's different, but the most significant point in this conflict is both of them are fighting by the equipment and by the gun of RSF. So, I mean, both of them are within the soldiers of RSF. Both of them are taking part of the conflict now in Sudan, especially this tribe are officially supporting RSF, and officially they are announced that they are supporting this war.
The Sudan War Monitor, an online publication, reports that tension between the Salamat and Habania date back several decades, punctuated by some hospitalities. There have been reports of escalation in clashes between the two communities in recent months due to the proliferation of heavy weaponry, worsening economic conditions, and a breakdown of law and order in areas controlled by the paramilitary rapid support forces. Al-Hajj says conflict between the two communities is likely to continue due to the proliferation of small arms in the area.
This war may continue because of the deployment of the weapons in Darfur in the hand of these members of tribes. So that means no state, no rule of government, no anything. So the rule is just for the community leaders who are pushing this war forward and they have say to stop.
Earlier this week, Human Rights Watch urged the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres to urgently mobilize the UN country team in Sudan to respond to the risk facing the hundreds of thousands of people in Darfur. The group also called on the UN Security Council to take steps to prevent further atrocities in Darfur. For VOA News, I'm Charlton Doke in Juba.
Still on Sudan issues, the international medical charity group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, says Sudanese authorities are preventing surgical equipment from reaching hospitals in the capital Khartoum. Fighting broke out in mid-April between Sudan armed forces and the RSF, leading to thousands of deaths. Claire Nicolet, MSF's head of emergency for Sudan, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the situation will likely cause deaths of hundreds of patients, including women and children.
The government and especially the military forces are enforcing this ban for surgical and medical items.
Why are they doing this?
That was said indirectly, but mostly it's for the RSF soldiers not to be treated. But now it's extending to, of course, everyone living in this part of Khartoum.
What kinds of life-saving surgeries are being prevented from being carried out?
So basically, all surgery will not be feasible very soon in all the hospitals of South Khartoum, because we already stopped in one of the hospitals, and MSF is still supporting another hospital in south of Khartoum, and we are really running low on supply. So it means that, for instance, C-sections, emergency C-section in particular, won't be feasible anymore. So in a few days, most probably we are not able to do C-section for women.
Have these maternal moms and their babies died because of not having the equipment that the doctors need?
Yes, if we cannot perform a C-section, yes, that's what will happen exactly.
Doesn't this violate international law?
It is violating international law. It is violating the agreement they signed in Jeddah in May as well. So both parties signed an agreement in Jeddah in May 2023. So this is definitely violating these laws and agreements.
Are there surgical supplies available somewhere nearby, and if so, where are they?
Yeah, so we have a lot of equipment, surgical supply ready to ship, or not even to ship, because it's by truck in one Medani, which is 3 hours from Khartoum. So very close to that, we have all the supply needed for continuing surgery.
How many hospitals in Khartoum are we talking about?
So at the moment, Doctors Without Borders, we are supporting two hospitals in this area. One, we already stopped the surgery because of this situation, and we are continuing with another hospital.
That's Claire Nicolet, MSF's head of emergency for Sudan, speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam. The spokesperson for the Sudan Armed Forces earlier declined to comment on MSF's allegations. Kenya's parliament has given its support to send 1,000 police officers to Haiti to help combat gang violence, despite a court order temporarily putting the deployment on hold. The MPs who approved the motion cited Kenya's responsibility to assist other countries in need. For more insight, VOA's Paul Ndiho spoke with Edgar Gitua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi.
Prime Minister Ariel sent out a plea for help some time back, and he's been saying we cannot govern Haiti because of this gang violence and these gangs that have taken over very important infrastructure. And Kenya answered the call, and using through the Security Council, it approved. For the first time, I am saying Kenya needs to send the right soldiers, the ones who qualify and who have tested battle, who are combat ready, who can handle this. If we go choosing through corruption a ragtag team, we are going to come back in body bags, Paul. Kenya will be embarrassed. This is our chance to shine on the global stage, to go and show that we can handle this.
The Haitians are okay with foreign troops coming in, but the gangs have made it clear. They have said under no circumstances should any foreign troops come into their country.
There is this gang leader called Barbecue. That's his name, yeah. Barbecue has been on record saying we will deal with any external force in the only way we know how. Remember, he's been a chief of police. So within his ranks, I am sure he has very well-trained people, militia.
Looking at the politics back home, Yes. Is this something that can be settled? Because right now, as we speak, there is a whole court order stopping any further engagement on this issue.
The court issue, for me, I am looking at it positively as an opportunity for the government, through its attorney general and its lawyers, to argue its case and to put forward a case to the Kenyan public and to the whole world of how of its preparedness and how it arrived at this decision and what informed its confidence levels that it was going to send soldiers to go. If Kenya can start preparing on that, regardless of whichever direction the court rules, I have a feeling that will go in a long way in making the Kenyan people more comfortable with the idea of sending our boys and girls across. Because like you rightly said, Paul, if we walk into this blindly and if we think of going to use our African brutal tactics...
That's a good point. Kenyan police is notorious for brutalizing its own people on the streets. Are they going to do the same thing in Haiti?
Now that Kenya has made a public commitment, our president has gone out on a limb and committed himself and said and agreed we are going to send our forces. It is too late to backtrack right now. What we now need to do as Kenya is make sure we send the right police force with the right training, with the right mindset. They need to be told this is not business as usual. We are carrying Africa on our shoulders. It's not just Kenya's problem. This is Africa and East Africa's problem. So we are let us be brand ambassadors for Africa. Let Kenya go and do the right thing. And then anywhere else, any other part outside Africa, if there is a problem, they can be like, let's get those African soldiers. They can make a difference for us. So it's a big opportunity for Kenya. It's a make or break moment for Kenya and Africa also.
That was Edgar Gitua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, speaking with my colleague Paul Ndiho. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, families of hostages held by Hamas are protesting. Find out how after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The families of nearly 240 hostages Hamas is believed to be holding in Gaza have begun a five-day march from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. They say they want the government to do more to win the freedom of their loved ones. Linda Gladstein reports from Tel Aviv.
It has been weeks of agony for the families of the hostages, weeks with no news about whether their loved ones are alive. Now they are marching to Jerusalem. Yuval Aran survived the massacre at Kibbutz Be'eri, but seven members of his family, including three children, were taken hostage by Hamas.
I always worry. I'm always in pain, and I can't sit at home anymore. I have to do something, and this march is what I am going to do with all the families of the hostages and this entire country.
Shaul Levy's granddaughter, Na'ama, was seen being kidnapped in one of the first videos posted by Hamas on social media networks. Levy says he is marching to deliver a message to the government.
We start here in this museum, Tel Aviv, walking to Jerusalem, hoping to meet the government, hoping the prime minister, to emphasize that there is no any alternative, only to bring them all back home.
The Hostage and Missing Families Forum advocacy group has demanded urgent attention be paid to the needs of more than 30 children taken hostage without their parents. They believe that one woman may even have given birth in captivity. Shelly Shemto's 21-year-old son was kidnapped from the music party in Kibbutz Re'eim.
I need to lash it! I am demanding from Benjamin Netanyahu and from all the cabinet to give us answers and deeds. We have no strength anymore. Bring back our children and bring our families home.
Israel believes that Hamas and Islamic Jihad are holding hostages in tunnels below buildings in Gaza, including hospitals, accusations Hamas and hospital officials deny. Israel's army spokesman shows a tunnel leading to what he says is a maze of underground rooms below the Rantisi Children's Hospital in northern Gaza. Israeli army spokesman Daniel Hagari.
You're now entering into the room where we suspect the hostages were being held. I want you to look at this room. People are putting curtains with nothing above, just wall. No reason to put here a curtain unless you want to film hostages and deliver movies.
The U.S.-designated terrorist groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad have posted videos on their social media channels of hostages making statements which Israeli analysts believe are coerced. A new video post shows a Hamas spokesman saying that the group is willing to release up to 70 hostages, apparently women, children, and the elderly, in exchange for a five-day ceasefire and the release of women and minors serving time in Israeli jails. Abu Obeida is a spokesman for the Hamas armed wing.
The truce should include a ceasefire and allowing aid relief, everything in Gaza Strip. But the enemy is procrastinating and evading to pay the price of the deal.
Israeli officials say they worry that a five-day ceasefire will allow Hamas to rearm and continue to fight Israel. They also say there will be heavy international pressure to continue the ceasefire. The families of the hostages worry that time is running out for their loved ones, and they say they hope that their march will continue to focus Israeli and world attention on the plight of the hostages and intensify efforts to secure their release. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Tel Aviv.
Still on the Middle East affairs, sexual violence can be a weapon in warfare. And female hostages face unique risks, once a report submitted to the International Red Cross by a medical team of Israeli Hostages and Missing Families Forum. The group was formed to bring home the Israeli kidnapped by Hamas militants. VOA's Natasha Mosgovia has more from Tel Aviv.
239 Israeli hostages are still believed to be held by Hamas in Gaza. About 100 of them are women. About one-third of these women are under 18 years old.
In Hamas attack on Kibbutz Be'eri, Reuma Tarshansky lost her 15-year-old son Lior. Her teenage daughter Gali was abducted and taken to Gaza. She has not heard anything about Gali's condition for more than a month.
Gali is 13. She's a teenage girl. My biggest nightmares at night are related to this subject. Puberty age, the changes she is going through, she is alone there. I don't know what they did to her.
Legal and medical experts working with the hostages' families on Monday submitted a report to the International Red Cross listing the female hostages' pre-existing medical conditions, ranging from heart disease to diabetes to asthma, and warning that in violent conflicts, women are especially vulnerable to sexual abuse. Ruth Halperin-Kadari is an Israeli legal scholar and expert on international women's rights.
The body of women is very often taken as a symbol to the body of the nation, and so violating the woman is actually violating the whole nation of the enemy. They are more susceptible to these forms of crimes. And international law, United Nations, the ICC, recognized that conflict-related sexual violence is a special form of war crime and crimes against humanity.
Halperin-Kadari told VOA more rights groups should draw attention to Hamas actions the day of the attack.
All of them resorted to the conventional symmetry, addressing the suffering of both sides to the conflict. And I want this to be clear. I am not denying for a moment, the suffering of women and children, of innocent civilians in Gaza. But what happened on October 7 stands out. It is not part of the symmetrical war between Israel and Gaza. It is something else, and it should be acknowledged. It should be recognized as crimes against humanity of the most cruel form ever committed in modern history.
Hamas also kidnapped Yarden Gonen's 23-year-old sister, Romy, from the music festival in southern Israel. She is still being held hostage in Gaza. She says that her sister has asthma and kidney stones, and she is worried about the potential for sexual violence.
Every minute, someone can harm her. What is stopping them from doing that, you know? They did it on October 7th for so many women.
Gonen pleaded for more women's organizations to speak out for the release of the hostages.
How could you leave us alone? How could you leave my sister alone? Why couldn't you speak until now?
Israeli police are investigating reports of sexual assaults by Hamas and are using video recordings, forensic evidence and testimonies in their search for those responsible. Natasha Mozgovaya, VOA News, Tel Aviv, Israel.
Still on Middle East, President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa says his country has filed a referral to the International Criminal Court asking for the investigation of alleged war crimes by Israel in Gaza. The referral will be a big test for South Africa's view of the ICC after earlier attempts by the country to exit the court, accusing it of bias. Thuso Khumalo reports from Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says South Africa is concerned by Israel's bombardment of Gaza. Speaking to journalists Wednesday in Qatar, he raised strong criticism about Israel's raids on hospitals and the deaths of children. Ramaphosa said South Africa has no doubt that ICC's intervention is now required.
As South Africa, we have accordingly, together with many other countries in the world, saw fit to refer this whole Israeli government action to the International Criminal Court. We have put through a referral because we believe that war crimes are being committed there.
Ramaphosa made the comments as he wrapped up his state visit to Qatar and called on other countries to denounce Israel's bombardment of Gaza. The president said his government condemned Hamas's invasion of Israel last month when militants killed more than 1,200 civilians and took more than 200 hostages. He said Israel's actions required all countries to unite in calling for ceasefire. His government previously described Israel's bombardment of Gaza as genocide and Holocaust. Israel has said it is taking all measures to protect civilians. It accuses the Hamas militants of committing war crimes in its massacre and kidnapping of over 200 Israelis on October 7. Israel also says Hamas is using its own civilians as human shields by hiding troops and military supplies in civilian facilities such as hospitals and schools. On Wednesday, Israel announced it had found Hamas armaments in Al-Shifa Hospital. Hamas has called the charges lies and cheap propaganda. The government's decision to refer Israel to the ICC has received sharp criticism from supporters of Israel in South Africa. Benji Schulman is the director of public policy at the South African Zionist Federation. He said South Africa should stop interfering with Israel's rights to defend itself and instead facilitate the release of hostages taken in by Hamas.
The South African Zionist Federation maintains that Israel continues to conduct its defensive war against extremist Hamas organization in line with international law and against those who have killed women and children and Holocaust survivors, and have also taken 240 hostages from a variety of nationalities.
South Africa has never clearly defined its position on ICC. Some officials in government and the African National Congress Party called for the country to leave the court after it asked South Africa to arrest Russian President Vladimir Putin on an ICC warrant if he attended a summit in South Africa. Putin attended the summit in August virtually instead of in person. The same call arose in 2015 when South Africa was pressured for failing to arrest former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir under an ICC arrest warrant when he attended an African Union summit in Johannesburg. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Tuso Kumalo.
Marvel Comics, the first Muslim superhero, is making her big screen debut in the Marvel's movie. From Los Angeles, Junior DeLord brings us the story of the teenager Miss Marvel.
Cosplayer Liana Ahmed has many Miss Marvel costumes, with the Muslim superhero making her big screen debut in the Marvel's movie. Ahmed says the character is the first action hero who reflects her identity.
So what I see in her is that desire to do good, that constant battle and constant struggle as a young person living under my parents' rule. Like, how do I go be an American and also how do I go be, you know, a South Asian person? She's Pakistani, I'm Bengali, but at the same time, I understand that is universal. First generation.
We're looking for Kamala Khan.
The character Kamala Khan, played by actress Iman Vellani, is a Pakistani-American teenager from New Jersey, who, as Miss Marvel, joins up with the superheroes Captain Marvel and Monica Rambeau. Growing up in the United States, Ahmed says she didn't see Muslim or South Asian comics and is most touched by the authenticity of Miss Marvel's immigrant family.
His representation is so much like my father. Yeah, it brings me to tears because my dad was always talking about history, always talking about the cultural differences, and he would tease anybody that got too religious.
Director Nia Da Costa says the cons are central to her storytelling.
You know, one of the biggest themes of this movie for me is, like, family. And, like, the Khan family is a really big part of the film. They're, like, the beating heart of the film. And these three women become a family.
Miss Marvel is an impactful character for Muslims around the world, says Muslim rights activist Marguerite Hill.
Miss Marvel is definitely something that has made a major shift. We love her, so we're really excited about the Marvels coming out.
Director Da Costa says she stayed away from cliches of strong women on screen.
It was really fun also that they're also different, and we didn't have to do any, like, fake, you know, girl boss thing. It was just like, yeah, let's just them be people and who have superpowers and beat each other up. And I think that was what we set out to do, and it was a lot of fun.
The Marvels has opened to mixed reviews, but that has done nothing to dampen the enthusiasm Miss Marvel fans have for their Pakistani-American hero. Jenny Adzulo, VOA News, Los Angeles.
That wraps up our show for this Thursday, November 16, 2023. We now leave you with the rhymers and the song Children of the Soil.
Fighting for peace, good enough.
We are fighting for equality, fraternity, and liberty. In order to repair the damages, we are the children of the soil. We are fighting for equality, fraternity, and liberty. In order to repair the damages, we are the children of the soil.
I taught me fought like a team. We civilians get the support. North East lives without water.
We've been listening to the rhymes and the song Children of the Soil. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bill Andrade, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Liberty in order to repair.
the damages. Damages. We are the children of the soil. We are fighting for equality, fraternity, and liberty. In all that you reap, we are the damages. Damages. We are the children of the soil.
When we remember the religious leaders, the elders, the soldiers, and when we remember the women.